Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Chris Morgan and Val Huffafinger.
What year is it?
2018.
Still getting close to the end of the year, and I'm really sorry for missing last week. I hate missing weeks.
You were real torn up about that, Paul.
It kills me. It really does. I mean, look, especially around the holiday time when, you know, other schedules are getting disruptive, I want to make sure that we have content going out to the airwaves, talking about all the stuff we normally talk about. But coming back from my trip, I was really jet lagged. I mean, just almost like a walking zombie.
Full vampire.
Yeah. It won't happen again. I apologize.
You're never going back to India, ever.
I'll just suck it up next time and record the show. That's it. It was great. I had a great time. Everyone was very nice over there.
Yeah. So you enjoyed yourself overseas? What was the 40K scene like?
I didn't see any 40K.
You know, this game gets into every nook and cranny of the world, as far as I can tell.
I didn't go too far off the beaten path, but I'll try to look next time.
Fairly wise.
Well, I said I had a good time. There was a nice little Italian restaurant in the hotel.
Oh, that traditional Indian Italian cuisine.
I'm not sure how to respond to this.
So many pizzas.
Honestly. What did they put on the pizza? Like this is actually really important to me.
Pepperoni and cheese.
It was regular pizza.
Yeah, that's why I said an Italian restaurant.
And I ate pizza. Somebody call Japan and tell them what regular pizza is.
Everyone knows. Everyone, they just don't. I did try to go into a McDonald's there. My driver was like, "No one goes to McDonald's, Paul."
It's probably KFC over there, right?
No, they have a McDonald's.
No, no,
they serve wine there, or is that just France?
I did not see very many fast food places, and I did have some authentic cuisine while I was over there. It was good. I said I had a real good time. Traffic. Ooh, I mean, just the way the traffic patterns are much. You just have to trust your driver is doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Would it meet the definition of a pattern? Like a repeatable string of things?
Well, I tell you, you're going to hear like it's chaotic and stuff. But the entire time I was there for over a week, I only saw one accident.
That's interesting.
So you got it figured out. And the most congestion that I experienced when I was there was the one traffic light that I saw.
So maybe that's the secret. Fear and self-preservation, no traffic lights. That'll keep the traffic moving.
That's it.
But it's like when I visited Paris, I didn't know what was different, but because Parisian drivers are actually, you know, fairly aggressive. They move in and out, but they don't honk, which kind of blew my mind. Like I was in New York City recently, and even around my own city in Toronto, like people are always leaning on the horn. Paris, they are cutting people off, ruthless. But they don't honk at each other. So anyway, a little insight.
In India, it seemed to be whoever honked the horn had the right of way. So their horn was not a "hey, get out of my way." It was like, "excuse me, coming through." That's the horn sound.
And in Japan, the horn was, "please go ahead."
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. I remember going around on a bicycle, it was very jarring the first few months to be honked at. And people being like, "no, go ahead." They're just being nice. And I'm looking at them like, "what are you honking at me for?"
You're always getting off the bike, storming toward, oh, my mistake. Forgiveness, please.
Low bow.
Happy to be back doing 40K talk again. Val, I announced today on Twitter that I'm in a competition to paint 60 Gretchens, see who can do it faster.
Sam,
unnamed competitor.
I noticed you didn't name it. I can understand why you might be concerned to name drop Val Heffelfinger on Twitter. You might be overwhelmed by support cheering for the opposite side. I am sandbagging a bit. I only got 46 taped up on my paint sticks. But I do feel like I have a spear method, and I will overtake you in good time.
We'll see. I have 30 completed right now.
30 fully done.
30 fully done, ready for the table, looking good, full
new yellow pants
on a rubric.
Might be a little bit of a bead of sweat on my brow right now, but I feel like I can get to 46 by the end of the week.
All right. So the race is on.
You know what I'm thinking is like each one of them have like 10 really well-defined claws, toenails, and like 5 teeth. That's like the thing to me that's going to be the real pain in the butt is painting all those claws and teeth.
Let me tell you the trick. Don't paint those.
I don't know about you, if now that you're through 30, I love the Grot model so much.
It's good.
They're cool so model. Characterful. They're really cool. And I know there's a bunch of them. They're just chaff, but there's some of my favorite ones. They're all based, even the plastic ones are based on the original Brian Nelson sculpts. Brian Nelson, for those who don't know, was probably the Prodigenator? Help me out, Chris.
Primogenitor?
Anyway, the Primorc of what a modern orc looks like. And they came out with the Gorkamorka range, and he had a lot of sculpts in the early third edition. And these grots came from, the ones that I have are pewter. The 46 are all, they're all old metal grots from the Gorkamorka era. And they're fantastic. So I will be painting the teeth and the claws.
Yeah, dude, I was just kidding about part of that. I think you should paint the teeth, most definitely. And then the claws depends on how you do your whole skin tone.
I was about to say, well, Paul, I've got a great new idea for a finishing move segment. How to paint Gretchen teeth and claws.
I found, you know, we were talking on previous shows about a recipe for painting orc skin. And I think I've got something that I'm really, really happy with. So I will talk about that later on during the hobby segment. And we actually have a new sponsor that I can't wait to introduce later on in the show. But first, let me talk about our sponsor right now. It's Discount Games Inc. Please check them out at discountgamesinc.com. There's all those holiday bundles coming up. They have loyalty programs and rebate programs that I think that you might want to take advantage of, especially when you spend some hobby dollars, you get some hobby dollars. It's really nice when it works out that way. That way, you know, later on when some of this other stuff, we're going to talk about the Vigilist campaign stuff, when some of that stuff comes out later on, you'd be like, oh look, I've got this credit I can use.
The more you spend, the more you save.
you know Jay's been great to work with. That's the guy that runs Discount Games Inc. Please hit him up with your orders. I'm sure he will appreciate it, as will we. Please let him know you heard about him from us. The Vigilist campaign, there was the big this was, I guess, a week and a half ago at this point.
Where did this come from, Paul? Like, out of nowhere.
I don't know. They've been kind of talking about this for a while, Val. They've been hinting at it since before Speed Freaks was announced.
Like the Vigilus, like this open day? Like this, I mean, I don't want to spoil the lead, but this preview was maybe my favorite preview of all time.
Well, I'm talking about like Vigilus as the setting for a bunch of stuff that was going to go.
They've already had 40K. They've had a number of box sets, but I just mean, I was not expecting to randomly wake up and see what I saw like last Saturday. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, same here. This is one of those times when I told you I'm severely jet lagged. I wake up at 3 a.m. and I'm greeted by a Titan picture, a brand new 28mm scale Titan picture.
that like, and there's so much cool stuff in this preview that no one's talking about the fact that there's essentially a new Warlord size Titan.
Yeah.
And like, it is like the least interesting thing about this release.
Well, it's like, oh man. And I love the idea that it's got this giant freaking bombardment cannon on its back. Because it feels like new territory for Titans, right? I kind of feel like the Storm Surge big weapons, is tiny getting arms. A little bit of envy, Titan envy, right now.
A little bit of tiny arms, big cannon on the back. I don't know. Seems in line with Titans.
It probably just wants the arms to start with. Let's be real. And then giant gun on the back is looking a little bit less. It's a little bit more. You know what I'm saying?
The gun is. Seems to be quite overcompensatory. Yes.
Well, there's very a lot large. Going on in this Titan. It's actually got like a deck on it with a figure.
Yeah, with spotters and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So let's just briefly run down everything that we saw in the preview. A little bit of Chapter Approved teaser. We'll actually be talking more about Chapter Approved next week. Guarantee it. Of course, that episode won't come out till Saturday, so don't worry, I haven't gone dark. Just wait for next Saturday when I'm sure we're going to have some awesome content. New demons.
Okay. The new demons.
Let's talk about it in a minute. We got Gene Stealer Cult, brand new figures. I'm talking about expanding the range to a quad.
Keep talking.
A four-wheeler, some dirt bikes, and I mean like...
dirt bikes.
Yeah, like legitimate grim dark dirt bikes. We have a new campaign setting with like Urban Conquest, a new Black Legion character.
Tell me about the character.
With a spear, with one of the coolest helmets I've ever seen. The chest piece looks awesome. I mean, this is, you know, this guy's going to be giant. You know, he's going to be Primaris size.
I mean, if Chaos Space Marines needed anything, it was even more difficulty fitting through doors. That's why they're always breaking everything. They're just trying to get in.
The painted picture of the new character here, the Black Legion, is it Harkin World Claimer, has a Ultramarine dead on the base. Mm-hmm. And then I saw some meme or whatever. It's like favorite Ultramarine preview from Vigilus. You know, I don't feel that way.
But
I thought it was funny.
Shots fired.
And you know, because Games Workshop's not breaking form, I bet you that guy's a lieutenant.
Well,
you're probably right.
A new Khalgar figure.
Woo!
And technically, Khalgar is a lieutenant after he yielded control to Gilliman.
I saw that meme. I thought it was well done. Tip of the cap.
I think this is the 14th Primaris lieutenant. I don't care. We need them all. We need every single one of them because they're cool. And so, hey,
and look, they just keep dying every game. Everyone always targets them.
Here's the secret. They can be vet sarges. You don't always have to use them as a lieutenant figure.
He's not wrong. Here's the secret.
Wrong. Just because it exists doesn't mean that it matters to you. It's all good. You can have all or none of the Primaris lieutenants that you want. Yeah.
It's funny. Khalgar, still, after all these years, seems to have a problem bending his elbows.
I think he's demonstrating excellent elbow bending. I think straightening the elbows might be the problem for him.
Oh, Khalgar opening up the door for Dante. You know he's next. I mean, I don't know. Could he be?
Dante's in the Primaris arc, isn't he? Like the Blood Angels get bailed out big and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, they bring a bunch of new Primaris to the Blood Angels.
Yeah, there's definitely some hope nurturing inside of my heart that we will have some new Blood Angel sculpts incoming. Even though I have a great love and appreciation for the classics. This, even with the regular plastic Space Marines, there's a bit of a lack of, how would you say, smallness? The smallness is showing.
I just want Primaris Death Company. Look, just give it to me. That's all I want. Okay. The Noise Marine, the throwback sculpt. This is attention to detail. The whammy bar, I just want to say that is awesome. And the Goblin Green on the base.
Yeah, the hoof platforms.
It took me a while to realize that the guitar also had a bolt gun on the bottom.
This is a complete throwback in every way to that glam rock style, like the cheeky style that they were originally conceived. And I like it that they've gone just to the limit with some of these, I guess, homages to the way they originally were, including the early bass style. Because pre 2005 or whatever, everyone use Goblin Green to ring their bass. That was just the standard.
There's an amazing thing where like Gab Thorpe and a couple other Black Library authors are doing a Tale of Four Warlords. So I think it comes up on the Warhammer community every now and again. And he talks about how the hardest thing for him in starting an army, because I don't think he's painted anything in a long time, was the fact that all of a sudden there's a choice to be made when you're basing stuff. So he's like, in my day, it was Goblin Green. And now there's all these different base colors you can choose from. Blue is mine. But with this model, I really want to call out the like insane execution of the zebra print and the cheetah print.
Yeah.
On him. Like the whammy bar is cool, but the paint job on this is incredibly slick and just perfectly executed. Also, the heeled cloven hoof boots. Gorgeous. He's a hilarious and amazing model.
It's nice to see a chaos model come out that doesn't have a mouth stomach.
He may have one behind that guitar. We can't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you don't know that. I mean, in fact, I kind of see some teeth right below the chest plate.
I'm holding out hope that those are, in fact, not teeth.
A very interesting other Gene Stealer cult figure where he's looking at some like map or some station or whatever. The map is really cool. It actually is the map of Warhammer World, Warhammer HQ.
Yeah, I was going to ask if that was true because I've been there.
Yeah, that if you're looking down on it there, the larger building is where the store in Bugman's is. And then there's that bridge that goes over to some of their front offices and the building out up into the left. So you're up into the right is, I think they're like executive offices.
I didn't realize it, but actually on the community preview, they actually point this out. And so they have a side by side of the Google map with it. That is actually really cool.
It's neat. Oh, so yeah, it's like, where do you start? I mean, this is crazy. I mean, this all the content coming out from this Vigilus Open Day. I mean, seems like a real thing.
Well, you know, a lot of what the big news is, of course, has been just the Primaris move for Khalgar and the potential for other characters in the future. I think less than the surprise is just the realization that this is happening and the speculation over what it means for regular Marines. I kind of want to go with that. Like, how is Khalgar going to be different, you think, as a Primaris? Is it just like an extra wound?
Number one, he can't ride in his Land Raider.
That's true. But he could ride in a Thunderhawk as long as it's all Primaris. I learned this recently.
That's good. With no idea what the stats, maybe they'll be in the campaign book. But I would imagine extra wound, probably extra attack. Who knows?
Sky's the limit.
Yep. They can do whatever they want. Juiced him up.
I still need to read the sequel to Dark Imperium because he had some real confidence issues in Dark Imperium. So I'm wondering if this is going to be his moment to be like, I did not fail daddy.
He's on the super soldier serum.
I do like, though, like going to the Black Legion guy right below him, that he's clearly Primaris-ish size or, you know, true scale size. I don't know if that's fair to say. Well,
that scale creep. I mean, Death Guard are yeah. Primaris size.
He's been juicing on that chaos.
The Thousand Suns are larger. And when the Thousand Suns first came out, we were thinking like, oh, because the Thousand Suns was supposed to be larger, I think, in the stories also.
Yeah. All I want to say is like for GW bent over backwards to find a like story reason for the Marines to be larger. With Chaos, they're just YOLO. You know. These guys, they're just bigger guys. Just
there is no shark too big to jump with Chaos.
You know what I mean? Like, I really appreciate that. And it doesn't mean that your old Chaos dudes suck. It just means that there's bigger, cooler dudes that you can have now. And
those
I love that.
Death Guard miniatures next to the old Death Guard miniatures. Yeah. It's kind of embarrassing.
I like the size of the new ones, but I like the style of the old ones, if that makes
like,
sense.
Like, there was already a little scale creep. Like, I believe that the even the Blood Angel sculpt was a little bit bigger than the Tac Marine sculpt and the Death Watch sculpt. I remember people talking about, hey, these guys look a little taller. So
the Grey Knight plastic kits are a little bit bigger than the regular Space Marine plastic kits, too.
Right. So they've been edging that way, but they just went full hog with Primaris. I love the look of them. I do wonder how certain, like you were talking about, you know, rules and stuff. I do wonder how certain things will translate to Primaris, like bikers. Like, is a Primaris biker Marine going to make sense?
It's going to be a big bike.
I'll go stick.
That's a big old bike, right? I don't know. We'll see what it's like, but I'm curious to see how they transition a lot of the archetypes of Marines into the Primaris scale.
A little bit more news. We heard that Grey Knights are going to get a point reduction of some kind and chapter approved. Sister of Battle Codex.
We've been hoping for that.
Gonna be previewed in chapter approved.
Yeah, both those. I mean, well, one of those things was common knowledge, and the other one was just, please God, do something to help. Let's pour Grey Knights.
Praying and to all, the God and, Emperor.
And all power armor and Terminator armor themed units in this game. I hope chapter approved delivers on its promise. Yeah.
Well,
and
what maybe, do you think that promise is? Just curious.
Well, I don't know. I think like they haven't said anything explicitly, but they've definitely said that they feel like all the armies are going to catch a break in this, and that, you know, there'll be something for everybody. And I just hope that they do good. Like, I know there's lots of armies that can use more than a little bit of help, and they're some of the most popular ones. Space Marines, within Space Marines, Grey Knights, Tau. You know, Necrons almost across the board, Death Watch. There's all these armies that have sort of kind of been pointed out of relevance. And so you can do a lot just by shifting points. And there's also the opportunity. I remember when they first announced the whole idea behind Chapter Approved, they said that, you know, we'll even revisit data slates. So is that possible? So like that's the thing, is the black box. We're all waiting to see what's actually in there. We know there's that whole preview codex for the sisters. But maybe there's some other stuff, too. And I'll be real keen to see it.
Could be. The Demon models. Now, we know that's coming out before a Age of Sigmar campaign. But, I mean, I don't know anybody who's not going to just import them immediately into their 40K army where if they're playing Demons.
I mean, because you're basically getting two games worth of models at the same time.
And what models, man? Look at Karnak. Look at that guy.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
You put Karnak next to like current Karnak, it's like, give me a break.
I still don't think he is the goodest boy in 40K, though. I think that still goes to the Rogue Trader pupper.
I was going to say, is it the Rogue Trader dog? Because he's a good boy. That's a good boy.
Yeah, we don't know much about the stats and stuff, but I'm really looking forward to the stuff. I mean, the modeling and the hobby potential is off the charts with this stuff. I mean, even that harp player, the demonette playing the harp.
This is my favorite thing is like everyone, especially like in Sigmar, you're like, what, Slaanesh has been squatted, you know, and Slaanesh is too real, man. Games Workshop's going to get rid of Slaanesh. And like GW is just like, hold my beer. And comes out with this herald that is just so twistedly wonderful. And just it's fantastic.
On the back of that miniature, there's this flayed flesh Slaanesh symbol.
Oh my! Yeah, I've only seen the one angle of it. I haven't seen the reverse.
It's I mean, you find the picture for the back of it. Speaking of the back of, not to jump off topic or whatever, but the Deathkiller Warshrike, the war boss on the back of that, looks like you can actually use him as a standalone model if you want, and he has a really cool sigil on the back of his leather jacket.
Yeah, I'm down to talk orcs. We could just totally shift. We can pivot if you want.
I'm talking about how to kill orcs today.
Do orcs shift gears, or are they always just in high gear?
Grind right through. You just grind them, no clutch.
It catches in the fifth. But I mean, that's basically, we can just gush over the cool models coming out. God, and that, I'm just scrolling down the news thing. It's, I mean, of course you can see all, you've seen them by now on the Warhammer community page. Just amazing stuff. And I will definitely be getting one of those Noise Marines. Although he'll look even outlandish next to the normal Noise Marines.
I will say probably not for me. I am a collector, but not my thing.
It is kind of funny though that like this new Titan has almost been overshadowed by some of this other stuff. Like we're talking, and it took me a second. I'm like, oh, is that a Titanicus Knight? And then I saw the scale figure, and this is a full on. I mean, he looks cool. It's the Warbringer Nemesis Titan, a new class of God Machine.
I think it's somewhere in size between a Reaver and a Warlord. It doesn't look as big as the Warlord.
I think he's got to be Warlord sized. I said there's some pictures that have come out from where they're displaying all the models, and I swear he's Warlord sized. I don't know. He looks jacked up.
I mean, it's really tough to tell. He is definitely huge, and he's very bulky and condensed around the center, where I feel like the Warlord kind of branches out a little bit. It's a little bit more hourglass shaped, maybe.
Yeah, his girthiness is much more top heavy.
Yep. I'm glad we're staying true to the tradition of large shoulder pads.
All right, let's change gears and talk about killing orcs. Now that we got Val here.
You know, quad mortars. I don't know.
All the quad mortars.
I don't know if we need to do this necessarily, but I'll humor you.
Well, okay. This is one of those things to where I'm hot on the orcs too, you know, painting this army. I'm assembling. The Ludicit.
Yeah.
The Ludicit comes with five models, but only four of them, only four def guns.
Yeah. And one of them has to be a mech.
Well, it doesn't have to be a mech, because if you trim that little spike off the shoulder, then you get a free commando.
Now that is thinking orky, Paul.
He comes that mech body has a little bit of different sculpt to his shoulders, to where they're a little offset to give you to make your mech pose, to give you your mega blasta or whatever that you put in his arms. And that little shoulder pad, the little shoulder spike, keeps you from attaching the burna, like straps, or even the mech gun, if you were to do it that way with that body. It's more of an indicator to tell you this is your mech torso, right? But if you trim that little spike off, then the harness for the burna fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put a burna head on it, because it comes with all the different heads for making either burna boys or ludas. So you've got all the parts there you need. And commandos, I mean, even if you buy a box of the commandos, you're still going to want more, and they don't come with burnas. You're going to need somebody to put your burna on. So turn your mechs into commandos or tank bustas or whatever.
Yeah. If you get a little orky ingenuity, you can also take one of those underslung burna weapons and glue on a bunch of gun bits, and you got your fifth luda too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Putting together those ludas is a challenge, because the gun itself is four parts. But
yeah, and they kind of connect across the body too, which makes it kind of awkward for painting. There's a lot of hard to reach areas of the luda's body. If they get an itch in the wrong place, they're going to be going crazy.
It is totally worth it though, because ludas are awesome. So, and it's a cool looking model too. I'm not complaining about the kit or the model. But I think you gotta kind of know what you're getting into, and then using those pieces, because I could see how you might think, oh man, what am I gonna do with this? You're gonna make a commando or a tank bust out of it, or like you said, another luda.
Now, I don't know if you got the Reebok version, but I hope you're putting them on 32s. It's so nice to have. They're like, of all the orc models, those and Storm Boys benefit just so much from being on 32s.
Well, you really should, I think, in my opinion, put them all on 32s, even the boys and stuff. I think that when you start kind of altering the base size, I shouldn't say alter. I think that the Codex has a bit of a slant to factor in the modern base size.
Maybe perhaps you have better insight than I do. I don't know. I find it's funny to me that suddenly rebasing is a big deal because of the Orc Menace, the green Menace.
It's not because the Orc Menace. It's a topic that's been around forever.
I know, but it's usually a topic in the sense of, do I have to? And then usually the community is like, eh, not really. Well, the Orcs, man, like at the Renegade Open, which is a large GT a couple weeks back, they actually had a rule, which was if your orcs were on 32s, they just could only swing in two rows because they just assumed everyone would be on 25s. And the thing is, even if you're on a 32, there's ways to honeycomb your positioning and all that kind of stuff, and still swing in three rows.
You only get one or two extra in that.
Fair, but I mean, it was still punitive. So I do feel like there is just an odd groundswell of fear for the Orc on the 25mm, whereas like 5 minutes ago it wasn't a big deal that I had 180 attacks. But anyway, it's fine. I'm actually kind of
variance is an overkill, right?
Yeah, no amount of variance can stop orcs from overkilling you if they get that many guys in base to base. Yeah, I don't know. I'm actually kind of excited about how my by the way, I've sounded like such a fanboy this whole time. But I am honestly excited for how my orcs will look on 32s. It will be a bit of a process to get them over to them, though.
Yeah, sure. I think that's expected. But the orcs on 32s, they look impressive. Well, most things that look impressive on the larger bases. Oh, yeah. I didn't really think I was going to feel that way originally, but they do. They look cool. I mean, even the Blood Angels on 32 mils, like we're talking about,
Yeah, that was the original one, right?
It just looked tougher. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the original controversy over, do I have to rebase my models?
You should, because you're going to want
to. There's a lot of good reasons to do that. And there are a lot of game reasons to do it. There's a lot of aesthetic reasons to do it.
So, Val, let me introduce you to the Dark Eldar Drukhari Shredder.
Yeah, that's a good weapon. Yeah, I know that one.
The Shredder is a 12-inch weapon, so that's
kind of bad pronounced right there. The Shredder.
Yeah. Assault 6, Strength 6, Neg 1 AP weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was not bad enough for orcs, the Neg 1 AP, that is, when attacking an infantry unit, reroll failed wound rolls for this weapon.
Yeah, it's not good. It's bad. That's it. And they can easily deploy them at what are the guys with the wings?
Those are the Scourges.
Scourges, yeah. So they can easily get four of them up in your grill.
If you want to go with something with a tactic that, see, this is one of those things I feel sometimes weird endorsing this, but if you go back to the index, you get Trueborn squads still.
Yeah.
That can take four special weapons.
Mm-hmm. So
the index, Trueborn, and the Scourges can take four Shredders apiece. And this weapon is dirt cheap. See if I can get you the point cost for the Shredder here. The Shredder is 8 points. And this is going on an 8-point model.
I've run into them. Like I read, like in the index days, I had a friend who would have a unit or two of those sprinkled in just for anti-horde duties. It's a good weapon. What's the range on it?
It's 12 inches. Tight, isn't it? No, yeah, it is. So I mean, you're gonna have, gonna need to be in a Venom, or they're gonna need mass. They're gonna need the Scourge. The Scourge is a 12-point model. The Cabalite Warriors is a 6-point model. I don't have the Trueborn point in front of me. So, but you think like a squad of five is not very expensive, and then you get these Shredders in there. I mean, you're looking at under 100 points for a unit that's firing out 4d6 shots at strength 6, neg 1 AP, rerolling wounds against infantry.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely the hotness. Dark Eldar, in general, I think, pose one of the most interesting matchups for orcs. Principally, I mean, Vect. The orcs have stratagems in a lot of different phases that are delightfully vectable. They also have bombers. So for the Luda...
Delightfully vectable.
Yeah. for the Luda situation specifically, you got to be very good at being able to block out bombers from being able to cross your models and do the mortal wound thing. The Void Raven Bomber does mortal wounds on threes, I believe, against infantry. So it's devastating.
And it does like 2 or 3d6 or something, right? Is that?
I don't know if it's that many. I think you roll 10 dice. It's like a lot of bombs. Right, so okay. It's like up.
Yeah, I think it's one of those.
But that's 6 dead Ludas, and you got a couple of those. And they're just slightly less... They're slightly undergunned when you compare it to like... what are the normal jets that the Dark Eldar have? I can't remember them. But anyway, they're normal ones.
The Razor Wing Jet Fighter.
Razor Wing. Thank you, sir. That's correct. But also, I mean, like, you want to talk about anti-infantry, a Talos is not only as tanky as it gets, but, you know, he's swinging a crazy amount of attacks in close combat.
The Talos and Grotesque are really, really good in the meta right now.
Homunculus Covens and like has been good the whole time and is particularly tricky for the orcs, especially once you're in combat, because they want to be up against you as well. So I've got a really good friend who's a big time Dark Eldar player, has been since Dark Eldar became something, and I look forward to getting some reps in against him.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough, but I think that's a cheap way that if you're playing any of the Eldari factions and you're worried about orcs, you could sprinkle in some of these shredders.
Any infantry in general is just going to get you a lot of mileage, because I think hordes, you know, as a counter to orcs, you might see hordes in general coming back, you know, swinging away from the big models that we've been seeing in sort of the Knights meta. A good counter to like big, heavy elite units with extreme but also limited damage output is to go to the Horde model. So like in Europe, I know we've seen a lot of success from Plague Bearers. I've been seeing the massive Fire Warrior spam pop up again.
Don't start that again.
Yeah, that tide keeps popping back and forth.
but played by competent players, right? So it's a bit of a different scenario. So I think mass bodies and having the ability to deal with them is definitely good. And finding little gems like this, Paul, I think is exactly what people need to be doing.
I've been looking at ways, because I don't think my Air Force is going to stack up well against what we'll see appear in the tournament. So I thought, hey, how can I replace this 600 points in my army or whatever? And got me looking around. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm definitely going to be playing orcs. I think it's going to be probably a couple of months before the army is finished, though. So I'm going to want to keep playing as things come up. And I'm going to have some tournaments to talk about here coming up soon, too. Well, there's so much stuff happening. So cool.
Yeah, it is a relentless cycle. And especially with some of the things hinted at in Vigilus and various rules that might be coming along with some of the releases that were previewed, you know, like the meta will continue to shift.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, we're talking about ways to beat things or whatever. So it's always on my mind. Like how I plan what I'm playing now is it's a combination of what I'm excited about playing, what's coming out next, what am I worried about, and then what am I worried about fighting right now?
Yeah.
And Gene Stealer Cults, I was like, man, what do I care if somebody just shows up 8 inches away when I've got 90 boys? No, I didn't care at all. Like, yawn, gonna give it, you know, don't care. But then I see these bikes and these quads.
Yeah.
It's got me thinking. But it's okay, even the bikes. Let's think about the bikes. I know we're jumping around. And I don't want to leave the orc segment at just play shredders and kill orcs.
We covered some other topics, too. I was actually thinking in my head, like, how have we not talked about the bikes and the ATVs yet, man?
Well, I mean, just think about that. That looks like there's at least two different squad configurations for those dirt bikes. And then is this ATV? Is this a four-wheeler? Is this like an attack bike thing that you can upgrade the other squad with? Is it its own thing? Is it a unit?
Well, it's got that laser cutter thing on it. So maybe it's the heavy weapon to the bikes. I don't know.
Yeah, and he's holding like a strack, you know, a thing of TNT. Yeah,
I think there's Acme Co. written on the side of them. Yeah,
and these models, oh, they're just so cool. And yeah, I mean, look, the bikes are begging to become Rough Riders for the IG. I know everyone's like, oh, Scout bikes, Rough Riders are where it's at.
Yeah, that's pretty legitimately cool. They're cool. They're some of the first bikes I've seen in the 41st millennium that I've been like, yeah, that's legit.
Yeah, and they got so many cool bits and stuff on them. This is going to be a gold mine for all types of conversions and kit bashes.
Just to like take the wind out of this conversation a little bit, they are so slight. I'm just curious to know what kind of rules these guys are going to get. I really want to know. Are they going to have some really cool janky stuff? Are they going to have some neat special abilities? Like what is it that these guys are going to be able to do? I'm really curious because they are just so light looking, you know?
I mean, yeah, them all sniper rifles and then like coming out of nowhere with some sniper rifles.
Some kind of like short range sniper rifle, something like that. I mean, if they've got some kind of cult ambush thing, right? You would expect that it has something to do with either an up and close hit and run sort of thing, or at least having the mobility to get into position and open up some threat somewhere that you wouldn't expect from. I mean, Gene Stealer Cult historically, as long as it's been a faction, has always been about just popping up wherever. and doing something.
Yeah. I just hope they can at least just be super cheap and just rip around the battlefield wherever they want to go. And that one guy, the one guy with the sniper rifle with his boot down, just taking a beat on somebody. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that does it for me.
Yeah. If there's five different heads options here, I mean, there's... Yeah, he's gonna be good. Of course, that model range, they did a really good job with it the whole way. Like, almost all those models are pretty impressive. We don't see them a lot because it's an underplayed army right now, even though they've been in most of the box sets released in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah. And thematically, I think they're now, especially now that they're sort of rounding it out with the extra aberrant models and these guys, you know, just the guerrilla nature of them is really coming across in the design, which is fantastic. Like, you compare these, like, imagine the Goliaths, which are sort of repurposed construction vehicles next to these guys ripping along them, alongside them, like, they're just going to look really cool. And like the way the Acolytes and the Neophytes have all been designed, and it's just a great range, and hopefully there's even more to come.
Yeah, it's very, really impressive, and I cannot wait to see the rules on these guys. I mean, it's just chomping at the bit, but I feel that way about everything. Everything is coming out.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what this World Breaker's rules are. He needs to be stabbing. Was it? Sorry. Yeah, World Claimer.
The World Claimer?
Harkin World Claimer. That's the Black Legion character here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't know. He's probably got like plus one attack or something.
He probably went into the Taserface school of naming himself.
He's got okay, let me just speculate. He's got what looks like an amplifier on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
So he might just innately deny Overwatch. That's what like the sirens on the rhinos and stuff do, right?
He's got probably check that spirit. It looks like it's like possessed by a demon. Probably comes back to him.
All those skulls hanging off.
That's just standard issue skulls.
Well, though, he's Black Legion, so he's probably he could have multiple god bonuses, like a little mini Abaddon.
Yeah, I'm enjoying an Abaddon that can jump.
I'm enjoying the 40k Rorschach test. This is actually how it works, though, which is kind of neat to me. Like the everything that happens with Games Workshop starts with model design. Maybe not 100% of the time, but certainly very high percentile. The design team creates things, and then the rules team gets them, and they look at the model just like we just did, and been like, all right, he's got like a mask. All right, cool. He's got a fun sword. All right, we're gonna give some rules to that, and then they figure out wicked things for us to do with them. So it's kind of an interesting process. I would have always thought that it'd be the other way around. Either it starts with a piece of narrative or an idea for rules or whatever, but actually is really driven by the model design team.
The models take longer to create than anything else, I think.
Do you think that he's leaping off of the course of a regular Space Marine and not a Primaris? Is this some kind of foreshadowing, guys? I don't know.
That armor looks Primaris.
He does look a bit small, but it might be because he's missing the lower half of his torso.
Those vents in there on the lower half of the torso look to be Primaris vents. I don't think those are
for like the Mark 10 armor.
Yeah, I don't think they're on regular.
I think
armor.
You might be right. I mean, the angle's a little tricky, but I don't know. It just, you know, just to get the tinfoil hat people polishing their caps.
Polishing their tinfoil hat?
That's right.
If there's any, well, let's just look at the holiday bundles. I don't see any regular Space Marines in there.
No.
Hey, apparently there's one with a power fist, a sergeant with a power fist or something.
Those bundles
are, at least it looks like it.
They're sweet deals. I know I'm probably going to be looking to split a Deepkin box with somebody.
I have yet to go into a deep dive on the bundles.
It's good. I mean, it's the stuff that, I mean, if you're going to be playing,
Were those pre-order this week?
I think they go up soon. I think we got a teaser pic of them in one of the community articles, but they're not up yet.
Gotcha.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this stuff, and we'll talk about that quick down and dirty orc skin that's working
for
me.
Maybe I might tell you what's working for me.
Yeah, multiple ways. All right, hang on. We'll be right back.
You are tuned into Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody, we are back.
Yes, we are.
Still here.
Still got Chris and Val.
Hasn't chased us away yet.
Yeah, so we're talking about how to deal with the orc menace simultaneously while two-thirds of us right now are painting orc armies.
Someone's got to keep us honest.
You'll discover, Paul, that it is a constant work in progress. We're never not painting an Ark Army.
Yeah, you're probably right. I wanted to get these Gretchen out of the way. And out of the way is a bad term. I want them to be done. I want to feel like a sense of accomplishment of having these 60 Gretchen. The Gretchen kit is, some of the bodies are one piece, so you're barely, they go together in no time. And once you kind of get a rhythm in painting them, they go pretty fast. We're in a race to finish. I didn't know you were starting with 15 less than I am. I feel like I need one more day.
That's fine. Like I said, I've got some dedicated time. I'm hoping to get them to tabletop by the end of the week. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we can talk about our Orc skin recipe. Mine, I started with Warboss Green, and then I went with a Coelia Green Shade Wash.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I've used that one.
And that kept my colors pretty bright. Then I went for the first highlight of Moot Green. I think Warboss then goes to Moot, like on their color chart.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to go easy with that. You can get a real neon look if you don't go kind of easy with it. And then I did a quick dry brush, Rakkar Flesh.
Okay. Yeah, really, really lighten up on the top layer.
Yeah, just on like the tip of the nose, ears, over the knuckles kind of thing, over the shoulder blades, because a lot of them have some very pronounced shoulder blades.
Yeah. The angles on them, I think, would lend themselves really well to a dry brush technique for sure.
Yeah. It just picks it right up. And that's my Orc Flesh. I tried it on the Warboss figure, my Chief Rakka.
Yep.
It looks great. I think I'm going to stick with that skin tone. But I know, as we talked about, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. So, Val, what you got going on for Orc Flesh?
Well, a long time ago, about 3 years ago, I saw a great YouTube video which talked about painting models just through washes. And this really caught my attention because that sounds lazy as all heck. So that's what I do. Actually, I use the aid of an airbrush. So I do I start with a black undercoat. I use the Stinrix Styrez. I don't know. It's the Badger brand primer, which is just absolute brilliant primer. And then I use a gray of that and do sort of a Zenithal style highlight to get a good deep shade on the model. And then I'll come in with a light gray to sort of catch a highlight, much like the way you did your final highlight. And then essentially I just use washes to block in my colors. And I use the Coelia Green shade right on top of that. And anything that's the dark gray turns, you know, green. Obviously the black still gets tinted green, which is interesting. And if you do it right, I kind of screwed up my top highlight on this batch, to be honest with you. But if you do it right, you almost don't need to highlight. They look like they have been blended.
Take care of it. Yeah.
The wash just tints the pre-shade and they look really good just like that. So if you're looking to get something tabletop, I can't think of a way that's anywhere remotely as fast. So I've been able to move through them. Although it's taken, like, calendar-wise, it's been a while. But, you know, as far as, like, time in chair, you know, I've been able to get through them a lot. And the other thing I like about the Grots is, you know, I'd really do stick to three colors on them, aside from apparently teeth and eyes, which I'd like to commit to doing for these guys.
Eyes, too? Man, you're sitting the bar high.
Again, they're just so expressive to me. And, like, there's certain things that really draw your attention on these models. And they're really cool. I'd love to do them justice. Like, I've had these models specifically are, when I got back into 40K, like, 3+ years ago, I got them in a lot, like, just a sort of job lot. And there was just a grocery bag. And because they're pewter and they were all just in this bag, they were all chipped to hell. And
you have the Gorkamorka Gretchen. I've got the plastic Gretchen.
Yeah, plastic Gretchen. The plastic Gretchen, really, if you look at the sculpts side by side, are essentially CAD versions of the Gorkamorka Grots. The Gorkamorka ones are all monopose. But like you mentioned, most of the Grots in the box are monopose too. You can just swap the heads. Or like the guns here and there. But anyway, so I really finally, because Grots have a real good purpose now, I finally have a good reason to have stripped them all down. Like, I took all the paint off and I'm rehabbing them and I'm really excited to have them. So, yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is that, like, blocking in colors on the Grots is really good. So I'm just doing three colors. So it's essentially the green body, and then anything that's not metallic will just be the primary color. So they'll all be colored blood axes. They'll probably be playing the role of a bad moon on the tabletop. But you know, I paint everything sort of in like a shadow gray or like a blue gray color scheme for my blood axes. And so basically anything that's not metallic or green, that just gets sort of washed in sort of a custom wash that I make. Today I made it up with Nelnoil, McCrag Blue, and Drakarth something shade. It's like a really dark.
Drakenoff Nightshade.
There it is. It's a really dark blue. So the McCrag Blue just sort of brings that up a little bit, makes it a bit more of a smoky gray, mm-hmm. like the old rust gray. That's the way I do my grots.
Yeah, we're talking about the Gretchen / Grots or whatever. They're going to be something that you have to deal with. This is a unit that's incredibly low points, that's like Lookout Sarah on overdrive. It's a scoring unit. It's a screening unit. It basically does everything for a really low point investment. So any orc player that figures out how to get them on the table quickly is going to do that. That's going to be in every, I think, initial build.
One thing that breaks my heart is that this desperation to get Grots on the table means that the stupid pointy head auto gun toting second edition box set Grots, we're going to see them on the table, and that is a travesty and an affront.
That's a weird thing to have anxiety about. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Those things are a perfectly legitimate thing to have anxiety about. They are horrendous. I hate them.
I've seen millions of them over the years.
Millions of them, yes. And I literally, so I've referenced this a bunch of times now, but when I came back, like I went to my parents' basement, I got all my old toys out, and I sorted through my minis, and I literally found my second edition Goff Orcs and my auto gun toting Gretchen. And I was like, there's no way anyone in the world would want these, and I threw them in the garbage. And I subsequently realized that there are people who not only will buy these things, but will play with them. And I'm almost willing to sponsor anyone, like maybe like a one for one or some sort sure, of yeah. like some sort of like, you know how they get guns off the streets, you know, just like an amnesty day. Like you come to me with your second edition Grots. I will give you in kind some proper Grots for you. You just got to figure out where I live and we'll sort it out from there.
You'll figure it out. That's I think that's really cool.
It does not sound sketchy at all.
Let's get the second ed Grots off the streets.
I'm going to feel good. I'm painting up 30 with red and 30 with yellow. That's going to help with squad markings. That's going to help with if I want to do different detachments, whether that be Bad Moons or Evil Suns or whatever I end up doing that day. I think that you need to have those type of color or some way to communicate with your opponent that these are different for different functions or whatever. But they have so much, like I was saying a minute ago, they have so much utility. They just do everything that you need to be doing in 40K right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're dirt cheap. So how do you combat this? Because it's going to be real frustrating to an opponent. It's like, okay, well, if I shoot at that unit, then he's just going to take the wounds on the Grots. So maybe I do something else. And so, or if I shoot the Grots and he's got the Runt Herd there or the War Boss. And, you know, it's just, you've got to be able to deal with it in an effective way. I know we were talking about the Shredders earlier, but, you know, Storm Bolters.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Storm Bolters. Hurricane Bolters, yeah, those will do the trick.
You know, I don't know if I'd waste the one-shot bombs, you know, on him like we were talking about earlier, but high rate of fire weaponry, like what has the highest rate of fire? What can I put in my army? So shuriken cannons, scatter lasers are probably the best rate of fire, but if you're not playing something that has that, you want to look at, I mean, you want to be really looking at your army. And I used to, in the back in the old days, back in the aughts,
yeah, I would always
pack a heavy flamer in my army. I feel like I always had to have at least one heavy flamer in my army.
When there was a template that came with that heavy flamer, that made sense.
Yeah, so
I remember doing that quite a bit.
Well, where I'm going with that is that I knew I wanted to have some assurance that if I was going to come up against a horde-ish type army, that I had something in there that would do something. You know, it'd give me maybe a little bit of an edge or something to dig me out of a tight spot or whatever. And what I'm telling you is you absolutely have to have something like that now.
Yeah, like I said, like I think, and that's also why, you know, knights and things that are all very concentrated firepower will struggle, because the other thing behind all this is, you know, 60 grots isn't, you know, 3 units of 20 grots usually. That's going to be, it's going to be 6 units of 10 grots. So they're all individually targeted. You know, they're a bit of a pain in the butt. One good way to get rid of them is target the unit they're protecting, of course, and deal wounds to that. But now you're dealing with a toughness 4 model instead of a toughness 2 model.
Yeah, that's kind of where my logic goes, is just target the grots directly.
The issue is there is that the Grots, although they don't get clan cultures, they still get the clan keywords. So they benefit from Pain Boys. They benefit from a 5++,
Big Macs.
So, you know, they're still although you'll wound them a lot, they'll still save a lot.
Which, watch out for those big mechs on bikes from the index to increase that shield range for a little bit.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, you can turn them sideways and do some janky stuff that way. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Or even just the only Big Mac that you have available in the book is on a 40 millimeter. So, you know, a Morkanaut or whatever, or a Waz Blom blasted jet, which neither of which do I endorse the use of. I endorse
the use of those. You mean something in the War Codex you say would say, don't use that?
I would support the use of those models over the second edition, Gretchen, but just from an aesthetic place. The other thing, too, about high rate of fire weapons, like we were talking about the Shredder, 12 inches. Talking about Storm Bolters, 24 inches. Real serious threat range, 12 inches. Hurricane Bolters, similar problem. So if they're coming into where they get their fire, the effective firing range, you're probably where the orcs would prefer you were anyway. And if you're just blowing away grots, then the things the grots are protecting are probably going to beat you up in a half second. Even Ludas.
Think about Smite Spam, for instance. Grots love to see that.
Yeah. That's a bunch of wasted mortal wounds. Like I've been trying to think of, different things within my own army that I could or would do to maybe thin out the herds of grots that I expect to see. And it reminded me of a Archangel's Strike stratagem, I think is what it's called, out of the Blood Angel book. And it had me until I remembered that it was only on units of Terminators. But it let you shoot twice, basically. With a unit of regular Terminators with Storm Bolters, when you think you get plenty of those guys with all those shots, maybe you've got something. And then you remember you're paying for Terminators. Hurricane Bolters were...
You're at least thinking about it. So I'll give you some points there.
Yeah. And that's... how I always approach things from a mono-faction build perspective. It's very convenient for me not having more than one faction. But the idea that I need to find some way of clearing out things, if hopefully from a safe distance, and kind of what I've fallen back on is just quad mortars. I've been running this double quad mortar, single Scorpius sort of heavy support backline support deal. And it's been working pretty well because the Scorpius is really good at peeling off things like Hellblasters and Aggressors and Wolfen and things like that. Whereas the long range for the quad mortar, you got a 60-inch, doesn't require line of sight, strength 5 thing that does 4d3 shots per platform. That actually seems to work pretty well. Now I'm considering dropping the Scorpius again just to go for another rapier platform because I want to have more ability to knock out more of these tiny squads at a time to open up those Ludas for the damage because there's just so much damage coming out of Ludas right now.
Oh, that's weird. I wonder if we'll see like Whirlwinds come back. I doubt it, but thinking about it.
I was going to suggest the Vulture Punisher cannons with Punisher cannons, but I think it's a twin link Punisher cannon on it, so it can only target one unit. So I don't think that would even do for you.
But like, tank commanders, though, now with screens being what they are, not being able to jump over screens, the IG have their own level of kind of obnoxious screens. And when they could have 20 shot cannons, they could have a bevy of 20 shot cannons.
Yeah. Yeah. A whole lot of them.
And those will still work really well, too, against the Ludas after the other stuff is dead. A lot of the mentality that I'm going through is I have to shoot this, and this to kill the grots that are in front, and then hopefully have something left over that can peel off a few wounds from the Ludas way in the back. So anything that you have that can kill both targets easily, and so you're not having to split kind of the roles of your army. Because if I have strength 4 weapons and I'm shooting against grots, well, great. But as soon as that transitions to a toughness 4 model, then your effectiveness in peeling off those wounds goes down even further. I mean, you were just talking about the force fields and the feel no pains from the Pain Boys. Like those things become even more effective. And like we talk about on the show, you want something that the longer it survives, the more you want the things that can hurt it dead in the later turns of the game, right?
Yeah.
Like your Shadow Sword with 4 heavy flamers or 8 heavy flamers, however many you're on.
No, that's real. That's real.
Yep.
You want to protect that to round 5. It's king.
So another thing I've been looking at is Devastator squads, but I feel like the quad mortars are still probably the best choice because you can set those up out of line of sight from the Ludas, and the Ludas outrange a heavy bolter.
Oh yeah.
So the other option is just to have a bunch of missile launchers. But even that, you know, from a points efficiency, like from a trading standpoint, if you're trading missile launcher devastators for Ludas, you're on the losing end of that.
Yeah, Val, what do you feel about berserkers? Like, how do you think they stack up versus orcs?
Well, that becomes a game of who commits first. Like, it's like Reapers versus Reapers is a game of who gets out of the Wave Serpent first. Generally speaking, the guy who does it first loses. So with berserkers, like a unit of throwaway berserkers could, you know, probably gobble up a few lines of Grots no problem. The thing is, they die in return. So what is the unit you trade to go and do that? You know, berserkers could well do it. The issue is, can they get there? And then can they get their T1?
I kind of feel like the berserkers are the better target for them, or the bigger units of boys and just kind of blunting the orc counteroffensive from melee.
Well, that's the point of the Grot Menace, though, is that they can do anything. They can be wherever, they could be counter to whatever it is your opponent's doing. So, you know, when you're as the orc player, you're not going to just deploy blindly every time, like Ludas, Grots. It's the Grots are going to be playing goalie for wherever your opponent's coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not even having flyers, not that bringing flyers against orcs is a good idea anyways, with that, what is it called? The bubble chukka or whatever that's called. Mm-hmm. Their anti-air.
Tractor cannon is what you're going for.
Oh, the tractor cannon. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Their ability to deal with air threats is just so strong that even something kind of off the beaten path, like off the meta, such as, you know, like a Fire Raptor or Hurricane Bolter, Storm Ravens, like if you're hoping to position yourself, say, behind the unit and to bypass the Grots, you know, because the Grots have to be between the shooting, the model doing the shooting attacks and the unit behind it, which we're assuming is Ludas all the time, always, forever.
No, nope. Solid.
You're not going to have space to do that.
You heard it first.
I'm going to say I'd rather like custodies in the matchup. I mean, they're going to get
the bikers.
Yeah, they're going to get a lot of wounds put on them in return. But, you know, like because they have two hurricane bolters have a hurricane bolter on each model, so they can spread their fire out quite a bit. Their issue there is, again, their threat range. They just got to be so close. Ludas are going to eat any flyer that they get to shoot at because they just hit on unmodified fives or sixes with the strat, which is also why, you know, Dark Eldar probably have a really good advantage there. If they're going flyer heavy with bombs, they can come and kill the Ludas because they can do stuff like Vect, the stratagem that's going to be most harmful to them. Things that
not
get
as much
around
as they used to be, but yeah.
Get around getting it. Well, I mean, the thing is, if Drakari want to go command point heavy, they really can.
You could have 15, 16 command points without even
trouble.
Sweat.
Yeah. No trouble. Just like orcs. You know, I'm not the greatest, but like, I would be thinking of what are things outside of the shooting phase that can reach the Ludas. It's not the Grots that are really the problem, it's that they stop you from killing the Ludas. So what options do you have that don't occur in the shooting phase, i.e. psychic, bombs, maybe other stratagems, orbital bombardments, whatever it might be?
That's a heavy command point commitment, but I guess if you do what you gotta do.
You know, I mean, we're talking about, especially if we're talking about a turn one scenario, you know, you're looking at, you need to get... So if there's one unit of 15 and one unit of 10, you need to get the unit of 15. Basically, you need to kill six models. So you need to get the unit of 15 below 10. A smart player, if that's a big risk, won't put that unit on the table. But nonetheless, if you get that unit below 10, they can't mob up. And then you've really reduced the damage output of Ludas.
Mm-hmm.
So that then getting that unit of 15 below 10 stops the mob up, which means that any, you know, CP investment in them, that whether it's shooting twice or DACA, more DACA, that's basically going to really neutralize the Luda menace in a big way. So you're not going to get the 150 shots. You're going to get, you know, fraction of that. Really, the thing you got to figure out is how do you kill six Ludas on the unit of 15. Bombs can do that. Psychic phase can do that. I'm sure Zinch has got some weird psychic powers that can reach out and do six mortals. You know, those weird ones, like orcs have one that's like that, the crunch, which, you know, target a big unit of models and roll a bunch of dice on sixes. It's mortal wounds. Those types of things.
Death Guard has a couple of those things too.
Yeah, they're all over the place and they're not really used. And that's kind of all you need to do. So how do you A, get your model in position to do that? are you willing to trade whatever model is capable of doing that? Because they're probably going to die in the ensuing phase.
Well, you got to think long term, though. Is that is that what's going to win you the game? And you, I mean,
granted, neutralizing the Ludus?
That's what I mean. You have to make the decision: is this move, this sacrifice play you're about to make, is that what's going to long term win you the game? And and if you think that it's reasonable that it is, then it's of course worth it. You can't be overly protective of your model or whatever. I never want to lose Captain Stabbers, you know.
Yeah, you gotta look at what the trade is. Yeah, I mean, remember when you deal with the loot, is like a Luda based list based on the detachments that you have to bring to support it, and you know the Ludas themselves is like a 600 point sink. Like it's a Castellan like level investment for the Orc player. So taking that out or reducing its effectiveness will tilt things more towards your favor. But Orcs are wildly efficient in many phases of the game.
Well, even if you put them on the back foot with the stratagems that they were planning on using, if they can't plan on, you know, if they have to now rethink about how to burn their command points, that's kind of a win in a high pressure situation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
See, for me, I don't feel like I can outshoot a Luda Orc list. You know, I'm not confident that I can do enough damage in that phase, and I have to be able to thin things out so that if I have assault elements, which I always do, which is already making things tougher, then they've got to be able to live to get there. So I kind of feel like part of the trick with a Luda list is, one, the table you're playing on and how well you use the terrain to block their shots. Because the one thing Ludas can't do is shoot outside line of sight.
Yes, absolutely. So like West Coast meta, playing in the frontline gaming style like square block ruins, that's why they exist. You know, I think they exist to give, you know, models the opportunity to be safe. And that's where, you know, having both close combat and indirect fire are helpful on those types of tables. But I think the reality is most of the 40K playing public don't play on types of tables like that. And then, you know, you're dealing with a lot of DACA. I mean, we're talking, you know, on a roll of three with more DACA, bad moons, something like 80 autocannon hits. It's nuts, right?
Well, so you mentioned briefly, and I don't want it to get lost, is that the Custodes, though, that army has been kind of hovering at the top of the second tier for a long time.
Yeah, it's even had some top tier moments too.
Oh well, sure, it bubbles up every now and then, but I mean, it's in my opinion, it's a real, real solid second tier army.
It's a rock to various paper and scissors. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that Custodians, they're especially the bikers. Assuming the bikers stay the same post chapter approved, I think they're going to be one of the more really effective ways of carving out some of these problems in your book in a precise way.
Is where I'm going, is that it may be really, they're going to get another win. I think they match up really well against Orcs. The two plus armor save and the high number of wounds, with most of your high value targets being able to increase their invulnerable save to a 3+, with some ability to feel no pain in some situations.
You need three wounds, so three failed saves on a Custodes biker with a Luda to kill it, right? Well, no, you need two. You need two, sorry.
The commanders have seven wounds.
So on those guys. But we're talking about the Veritas.
The standard bikers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Six wounds.
No, those guys are four. I'm pretty sure. Am I crazy? Pretty sure they're four.
Oh, you could be four. Could be right.
I'll check it out.
Regardless, let's say it's
Shield Captain has seven is where I was going with that.
Yes. Okay, even seven. But let's use four because it's a little easier for my brain. So that would be two failed wounds of damage that you'd need. And you're going to need to do six. So that means you need six wounds total to be able to do that. They're wounding on threes. So like, what, 18 hits to kill a biker? Am I crazy?
No, sounds right.
So yeah, they're pretty tanky.
Virtus Praetors are four wounds.
So there you go. But I mean, like, nonetheless, that's still two of your standard three man units of bikes that could potentially go down versus Ludus. And they're hard to hide, and they also get no benefit from their banner bearer against them. So it's not like it's impossible. It's just I don't think a lot of the obvious ways through are there. I think terrain is really, really important.
Well, it's a bit of initiative. I mean, they do have a decent. I mean, they're not gonna outmove Ludas, but if they start on the line, if there's any cover there, this blocking line of sight, then they do get that large 14-inch move. They've got the range on their weapons, and then they can charge. Then they can charge the screen.
Maybe trap it.
Yeah, maybe with the big bases.
Yeah,
you never know.
You get that trap.
The high toughness helps when receiving incoming attacks from, like, say they get intercepted by some boys or something. They have a pretty good chance of surviving, be able to hop off and do something else later. I think that the strength of those bikes is definitely going to show in these situations, especially if you're good at 2-up saves.
That helps.
I just think
I'm pretty sure my career Grey Knight Terminator saving average is probably 50%. So,
well, the Terminator's died of las guns. You know, it's going to be the same with these guys. But where I was going is that there's now going to be a list that's injected into that top meta. These guys, I think, you're going to be okay against.
Absolutely.
I could be completely misjudging it, but I think overall they'll match up pretty well against the Orc list. We'll see.
Yeah, Custodes, Standard Eldari. I'm sure there's lots of other ones that I should be worried about. You know, just I mean, Yanari, come on. I mean, they're still amazing. Double Spear Yanari is still amazing. They can hide from you. They can come out of nowhere and beat you up and then run away. You know, all of those Grout screens can trigger a Soul Burst.
So yeah, Soul Burst definitely cashes in on that idea I was having earlier. Is like anything that can shoot twice, right? Or act twice.
Well, I mean,
is going to be super efficient.
Or, I mean, more importantly, you roll up with just your ridiculous 1 million-inch move so that you're in range with everything. You kill a couple lines of them, and then you Soul Burst off of that back to safety. And, you know, I mean, the Orc player may or may not be able to touch you. Wave Serpent Spam, I mean,
Waves are lots of fire. I mean, with you can twin scatter lasers on the top, shuriken cannon on the bottom.
Yeah.
Plus they have that serpent shield, and that reduces the damage characteristic by one, I think, for incoming fire. Is that right?
Yep.
So
and put a fill paint on it.
Oh, yeah, wait
a minute. It means double the Luda shots, right? Needed to kill it. Am I recalling this correctly?
You are correct.
Yeah. So possible.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of ways around. And there's also just the fact that it's like, I mean, a 2,000-point game, there's lots going on. It's not just going to be about these Ludas. They are going to dominate whatever fields of fire they have, though.
Well, it's about making it to those third and fourth turns of the game where you're really going to win it. So, you know, this is not necessarily about, you know, how awesome Yanari are or whatever. I mean, that's not necessarily what I want to go with it. It's what's going to stack up against those Orcs. In a way, because the Orcs are going to be in a top tier list. They're going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So how do you alter your list to make them less of a problem? To knock them back down to the bottom ranks, Val?
Play Orcs.
Kind of feeling like painting up my aggressors.
Hey, there's a good option, but again,
no, aggressors, they don't work how you think they work.
They're the dudes that are just bolters with bolters on them, right?
Bolters with bolters, and if they stay still, they shoot twice.
Yeah. Although you can't do you can't do that rapid deploy thing anymore to really get into the kill zone. Like the who are the sneaky space marines? Raven Guard?
Raven Guard.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you mean the chapter, yeah.
Yeah.
It was Raven Guard, yep. Oh, so Orcs, I mean, everybody's going to be playing them. You're going to have to prepare for them. There's no getting around it. I think that's high volume.
If there's some solace to be had, I spend a lot of time on Warhammer Facebook and air quotes competitive pages and such. I'm going to throw a little shade here. A lot of people are not sold on Ludus. I don't know if it's just a little hobby snobbery going on or whatever, or maybe we'll just need to see this play out. But I think a lot of Orc players just want to play with their toys at this point. It's a question of are the real, you know, competitive, super optimized types going to start gravitating to Orcs? And will you actually see them if, like, you're trying to compete for the top tiers of a tournament? Are you going to see those really tuned up Orc lists in force? That's a big question mark for me. I don't know if you necessarily
maybe
will.
Maybe you won't the next month, but certainly.
Why not?
In January.
Dude, these models are on the shelves. Like, Borrowhammer's a thing. Like, there have been a bunch of GTs now where there just haven't been competitive Orcs lists fielded. I mean, the last 2 weeks I've been looking, I guess certainly the last weekend, like there were no real competitive Orc lists out there. So I don't know what that's all about. I think I'll be curious to see if they'll be as prevalent at the top end of the meta as they should be.
I do not in any way, shape, or form think that we are overhyping the power of this codex. I don't.
We're not overhyping it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to give up playing their Eldar.
Well, That is true. But still, this is you're going to have people that are longtime Work fans that already have the models. They've got it there. And you got people that are new coming wanting to play something different. That's it.
Yeah.
It's going to be there. I think if you pack one or two more multi-shot weapons than you normally do, you'll sure. probably appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh, we didn't even talk about riptides, broadsides. With enough drone support, they might be able to even handle some bad volleys coming their way. Although, like, Ludas can melt a riptide pretty easy.
2+ armor save, though. Maybe they just get lucky.
3+ on a first turn, it's a 2+ for sure. If you do prepare positions, don't forget about prepare position, folks. Don't sleep on it. It's a really, really useful tool. But I was just going to say, like, if you're an orc player and you're still hanging in there, and take it from me, you're probably not threatening the top tables of the tournament, because you're in it for different reasons at this point, if you're still playing orcs. So that's why I think they might be underrepresented for how good they are for a little while. I think even something like Tyranids, like, there are some really strong Tyranid builds. You don't see them. I had an argument with Jeff Robinson on another show, and he was saying the Tyranids are good, but I don't think you're going to see them competing very hard, because the people who have been loyal to Tyranids, they're like, this is not an insult, it's like, they're not, they're playing Tyranids because they like Tyranids, not because they're like figuring out how to optimize every single thing about Tyranids. They just really like the army, and that's why they've stayed loyal. So it'll take a long time, I think, for people to come around.
I think that's a little bit of wishful thinking. I think that you always have to prepare for... Now, granted, sometimes, there's like the ghost of the meta that you think... And then you don't encounter it. But
there are things out there right now that comprise a massive part of the meta that we can guarantee. So we're talking about lists that are optimized every time you see them. Eldar, Knights, out there, you want to talk about like a bogeyman that wins all the time and no one really knows how to plan for or plans for. 1000 Sons. If you check out 40kstats.com, which is a fantastic website, you can actually see what factions comprise the GT meta. And I think it's going to take a while for orcs to really get that share back. And they used to have a really big one at the start of Index 40k. I think they were the largest Xenos faction represented, and that's before everyone started playing Eldari again, because no one played Index Eldar for some reason. But yeah, anyway, I think those who like it, orcs like them a lot, they won't necessarily have the most optimized stuff out of the gate. But we'll see.
I'm pretty sure that someone that shows up with 10 Rucka Truck Swig Buggies will probably still do all right.
That's the other thing, is they are so good that is also a thing that can happen.
I know you can't show up with 10, but, three Rucka Trucks, 3 Boom Daka Snaz Wagons, 3.
Actually, you can take them in mobs of 3, bud.
So yeah?
Okay. Yeah, you can get at least 9.
Well, guys, let's go and wrap it up. I do want to introduce our next sponsor. We're going to be talking about him on the next several shows. This is Firmer Terra, and I'll put the link in the show notes, but it's Firmer Terra. They make a collapsible gaming table. This thing is super light. It's pretty affordable. It's $199 shipped within the continental U.S., this is a company. I had the pleasure of speaking with them tonight. Very enthusiastic about gaming and really just making gaming accessible to folks. I think this is good for if you're going to a store that, you have your gaming table, they need more tables for a tournament. It can easily fit in your car and get down there. It's got 3-leg design, so very sturdy in them, even in the middle. It doesn't lag in the middle. It has a 30-inch height and it's adjustable 4 additional inches higher. So if you want almost that counter height feel to it, and when it breaks down, it could fit under a couch. It seems to be a pretty cool thing. And I'll put a link to their website in the show notes. And so if you're looking at a table, you don't have a lot of space in your gaming area, or you just want an additional game, a table to game on, that's not your hobby table, not your painting table, I think you should check these guys out.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I myself attempted, I looked real long and hard at this table, looking for a nice fold up one. Unfortunately, shipping to Canada was a little steep at the time. I'd love to look into whether or not that's changed. But I really like the design because it folds up into that 4 length, so you can actually store it at the end of a closet. It doesn't, the one I wound up getting it's just a 4-legged table, so it really sags in the middle. I'm like, I love that I have it, but it doesn't inspire confidence. So this table is definitely one I would have preferred to have gotten. So maybe one day I'll sneak it into my luggage when I'm down south.
Well, they say it folds down into almost like a guitar case size.
Yeah, I guess that'd be accurate because, yeah, it's like, what, it'd be 16 inches wide-ish?
Now they say that you can make war anywhere. And I've seen these in action. These guys were at Adepticon last year. I know a couple people with these tables, so I can personally vouch for them. If you're looking for one of these, check them out. So we're going to be talking about them on future shows as well. Happy to bring them on to our show. And the way they support us, and we say this all the time, so the way that people keep doing that is support them. So check them out and see if it's right for you.
Awesome.
You guys have a good rest of y'all's night.
Yeah, see you next week. Looking forward to it.
Good night, Paul. Thanks for having me.